Welcome to the Blue Stocking Circle podcast, Lady Nerds on Popular Culture. We're your hosts, Grisel,
Ashley,
and Bea.
And this is Minisode 4.5, Feedback, Favorites, and First Impressions. Before we get to the feedback, we would like to make an announcement. This Christmas, we'll be releasing a bonus Christmas special, the Blue Stocking's Knock Your Socks Off Best of Award Show. And now, back to our regularly scheduled program. Let's share the results of our most recent poll on Battle of the Austin Gents, and Darcy is the clear winner with no suggestions for alternative Austin Gents. However, I still stand by Wentworth and will remain true to my original vote, Wentworth forever.
You guys can't see me, but I'm jumping up and down in the chair.
Now, on a more serious note, we have received some really great feedback on the episode and would like to share some thoughts. So we got into quite a discussion. This actually spurred a fair bit of discussion on our Twitter. And from Persuasion underscore JA, we got some feedback on Anne's so altered looks when Wentworth discusses the way, or at least she overhears him discussing her, and he says that she looks so altered. She suggested that maybe what he's really saying is not so much that she's not pretty, but maybe something else. So would we like to discuss that something else?
So I like that feedback, and I think that kind of goes into the idea that it wasn't the looks as much as her personality, and kind of the idea that she's been living under a shadow behind a rock. So I kind of in my head imagined that before she was like this little pretty flower, and then, you know, everything happened, so she kind of shrunk into herself. So what he's really commenting on is she's a lesser version of herself. I don't think she was ever really outgoing, but just a little quieter, maybe just a look of sadness on her face. And if we're looking at it that way, it's actually really perceptive of Wentworth. If he's not talking about her looks, if he's picking up on the fact that her whole personality and just way of thinking has changed, then you know what? I'm going to give him some points, because that's not something that I would think that a sailor would notice right off the bat. So that's an excellent point, and you'll be happy to hear, Grisel, that Wentworth has now risen in my estimation
as
an Austin Gent.
I kind of agree with that. I think when I read it myself, I do feel that he's not really referring just to her looks, but more to her personality. Whatever it was that spark between them that he loved about her is missing, and probably because she has been cowed by her family into submission. So I can definitely see it being more than just her looks, and also a good thing. Men who aren't just looking at women on the surface
louder
surface level is a good thing always. So another point that we received, which we really enjoyed, is Bee's comment on men who like women who own property can vote and wear pants. We are happy to note that all of you seem to agree that we should all be able to vote and wear pants, and we are voting pant-wearing women around here, so it's all good. All right, now, we also got another little bit of feedback on the Anne and Wentworth personalities when we were discussing whether they were a little bit too dissimilar. Suspect Nargles, which, can I just say that I love that Twitter handle?
Yes.
That is awesome. She was noting that they could actually be very similar. They both feel very strongly, and they both catch each other's looks and know what the other is thinking. And as she notes, Jane Austen does tell us that there could never have been two hearts so open, no tastes so similar, no feelings so in unison. So the idea, not so much that their personalities wouldn't really jive together, but that maybe because Wentworth is a man, he is able to better express his emotions, and that's why he comes across a bit more extroverted than Anne. But ultimately, they are very similar in manner. And I agree. I think that's a good, very, very perceptive reading of that.
I think it's interesting, yes, looking at it from Anne's perspective, we're kind of hemmed in by her personality and how she thinks. So it would be kind of interesting if Jane Austen had ever written, you know, like a retrospective.
Are
or
we
like,
going into the dark side of like Twilight
that,
territory?
I didn't want to bring
you
that up.
You know that's what that is.
I didn't want to bring that up because, you know, Twilight, but the idea that how would the story be different if we're looking at it from Wentworth's perspective?
Yeah.
Would that discussion have been different? And then is it because Wentworth is a man, so he's more, you know, okay with expressing his feelings? Or because he just looks at Anne differently than she looks at herself? You know
I'm thinking
I mean?
Somewhere out there somebody has written this book.
Absolutely.
Totally.
There's like 20 copies of Barnes & Noble right now.
I'm sure there is.
We did get that feedback about Dear Sophie.
Yes.
Yes, Sophie Graham, which I think would be a great, I really want to read it. I have to track it down
in
libraries because, yeah, there are a lot of great other characters in there. And then Sophie definitely would be pants wearing, voting, get me on the ship because I want to have adventures. So,
Admiral's wife. So now let's jump into this month's favorites, and I'm going to get us started. As we all know, I do enjoy myself a good cry, so hashtag sorry not sorry. Today we're going to share favorites that hit us right in the heartstrings, or that made us sit down in silent wonder. So I have been struck, and struck hard, by Coco and the Batman Annual 2, because both of these things came within the heels of each other. Like, my viewing Coco was quickly followed by the arrival of Batman Annual 2, and both of them was just life, and the reality of life, and the terrible things of life. So the drama was super epic, and my feelings know no bounds. Honestly, watching Coco, I could not stop crying. When my boyfriend asked me, when did you start crying? I was like, when was I not crying? Because from beginning to end, it was just, I don't think I've ever cried that much in a movie. It just goes on. But it's so nice, and it's so sweet, and it's so colorful, and it's beautiful, but it will make you cry like crazy. And then Batman Annual 2 is just so well done. It's everything I could have expected. It has a lovely partnership romance story, and I am just all here for that. And then it hits you too. So there you go. So those are my feelings. Those are my new tearjerkers. Watch, read these things if you haven't done so. Although Batman Annual is really hard to get. It sold out like right away.
I have the same story when I went to go see Coco. I came out of it, and for the next 15 minutes, I could not speak because I would open my mouth and then I would think about the movie and just start bawling. I mean, maybe 90% of the movie was in tears.
You can't reflect on it without crying.
Yes, and it's one of those that it doesn't make you cry. I feel like the crying is earned because it's actually discussing very real life, very valid situations and things that happen.
Pixar knows.
But it does have a happy ending. Like, I know we're talking about this movie just like, you know, broke us down, but it does have a happy ending. It's just getting to the happy ending. You need to bring a box of tissues. Those little packs they sell, you know, to travel is not going to do it. Box. And to be fair, I cry at jewelry commercials. So making me cry is not really a high bar, but Where the Red Fern Grows by Wilson Rawls, I think is something that would make most people cry. It's really tragic. It's a beautiful story. It's a Billings Roman about a boy living in the Ozarks with his two hounds and their adventures. I never not cry when I read it, but it's just so vivid and it's so well done that I never not reread it. It's one of those books I periodically pick up, and it's just like a good cleansing read for the soul kind of thing.
It's so sad.
It's so sad, but it's so good.
Much like Mary Lennox in The Secret Garden, my heart is frozen and I don't know how to cry. So I am going to take Coco as a challenge, and I'm going to report back and let you both know.
I'm excited.
My favorite book of the year, although it did not make me cry, did plunge me into a state of deep melancholy. That sort of stunned wonder that you mentioned, Christelle, it definitely induced that. It's Special Topics in Calamity Physics, which is Marisha Pessl's 2006 debut novel about a brilliant but sheltered teen girl named Blue, whom I adored and is my favorite protagonist in years. The book is both a compelling murder mystery as well as an emotional coming-of-age story about a girl who has traveled from town to town with her professor father since her mother died when she was little. They finally settle down for Blue's senior year of high school so she can increase her chances of getting into her dream college, but the year is interrupted by the murder of Blue's teacher and mentor. At the end of the book, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but Blue has been so changed by her experience that all she can do is lay on the floor and contemplate her existence. And by that point, I was so inside her head that I nearly did the same. And this is as good a place as any, I guess, to recommend Arrival, the 2016 science fiction film starring Amy Adams, which I saw earlier this year. It's not just a brilliant rendition of my favorite plot, the alien invasion, but also a realistic portrayal of a female scientist, which I very much appreciate, and a moving exploration of grief. And it also has one of the best twist endings I've seen in recent years, up there with season 1 of The Good Place, which you can hear me rave about in Minisode 1.5. It's excellent. Go watch it and take tissues if your heart isn't frozen like mine is.
Oh, that's a good bar. Like, because I know how much you like the twist of The Good Place. Join us next time for episode 5, where we discuss that triumph of 1980s animation in one of my favorite childhood movies, The Secret of Nim. The Secret of Nim is an adaptation of Robert C. O'Brien's 1971 children's novel, Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim. Wikipedia calls it an animated science fantasy adventure, so I think it checks a lot of the boxes that we like to talk about and discuss.
It checks all the boxes.
And fun fact for anyone out there who's a fan of American Tail, The Land Before Time, or Anastasia, this is Don Bluth's directorial debut film. First impressions, have you guys heard of it, read the book, know anything about it?
I read the book as a child, but I thought the movie was American Tail. So clearly...
You conflated them.
I don't know much about this.
So I have neither read the book nor seen the movie, which I find interesting because I have seen all these other movies that you just mentioned, and I used to watch all of Don Bluth's stuff. Now, I know it's about mice. I thought it was...
Accurate.
It was an E. Nesbitt. Apparently, I was totally wrong. Ooh, no. I knew it was book-based. Wrong book, obviously. I think it's based on other people who have mentioned it in passing. I'm assuming it's an allegory of some sort, maybe?
Maybe.
Involving mice?
That
there may be an English village scenario? I don't know. I could be making stuff up. I could be coming up with all the other movies / books about animals that represent something else.
The allegory, I think, could be a potential reading / watching, okay, understanding of it. Could be, but I don't want to spoil anything, so we'll leave it at that. And if anyone is a fan of Dom DeLuise, or not a fan of Dom DeLuise, because I know he can be very divisive, he voices a character in Secret of Nim, Jeremy the Crow, who I love, I adore, he's one of my favorite characters, but just throwing that out there, you might not like him so much. He's a little much.
I have no idea who that is, so I'm going in with no preconceived notions.
Oh, I'm so excited. This blank slate.
I'm going to assume that I will cry. Because Land Before Time, American Tale, come on.
You're going to cry. B will not cry. Lady B, I think, will not. I don't think it's quite at the level of anything else that we've been talking about. But Grissel, yes.
Totally.
Not the whole box of tissues this time. I think just one or two will get you.
That can be done.
Get you through.
Can you be the appointed newbie, Grissel? Because I've been the newbie for everything except the one I chose.
I will totally be the newbie on this one.
Thank you.
Okay, so I am very excited for Grissel and Lady B to watch one of my favorite childhood films and potentially tear it apart, but that's par for the course, so I understand. Episode 5, The Secret of Nim, is going to air on January 1st. And in the meantime, you can find us at thebluestockingcircle.com, on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Tumblr, at Blue Sock Circle, socks spelled SOX, or you can email us at thebluestockingcircle@gmail.com. We are also available on Apple Podcasts and Google Play, so please listen, rate, review, and subscribe to help us grow.
Cheers!
I love that we're going from Jane Austen to a 1980s cartoon about mice.
That's just, we are lady nerds, we discuss pop culture, and these are two very important pop culture things, to me at least, the second one. We can all agree on the first one, but they're part of, you know, the cultural zeitgeist.
I'm here for it.